Hello and welcome to Atlantic Brücke's new dialogue format, the Transatlantic Call. My name is David Dyson. I'm the Executive Director of Atlantic Brücke. And on behalf of our team, I would like to welcome all of you to the fourth edition of this audio format. In these 30-minute conversations, we'd like to give you regular first-hand insights into a variety of transatlantic topics and debates. The conversation will be held in English, and you can dial in or hang up at any time. To ensure a fluent conversation without external noise on the line, the audience will be put on mute, and we are recording this transatlantic call. Some of you have already sent us questions beforehand, and we'll try, of course, to consider all of them in the following conversation. Today, our transatlantic call is entitled One Year After CETA's Implementation, and it's my great honor and pleasure to introduce our very special guest in today's call, Dr. Eilish Campbell. She is Assistant Deputy Minister and Chief Trade Commissioner of Global Affairs of Canada. Eilish Campbell joined Global Affairs Canada as the Chief Trade Commissioner in March 2017. The Trade Commissioner service provides Canadian business with practical advice on foreign markets to help companies sell, export, and grow through more than 160 offices in Canada and around the world. Previously, Eilish Campbell was General Director at Finance Canada and Vice President, Policy, International and Fiscal Issues at the Business Council of Canada. Eilish Campbell, welcome and thank you very much for joining us today.
Happy to be here. Hi.
Hi, Eilish. And the moderator of today's call is Mr. Robin Fehrenbach from our team. He is Head of Research and Documentation of Atlantic Brücke. Welcome to the call, and with that, I would like to hand over to you, Robin. Let's start the conversation.
Thank you very much, David. Dr. Campbell, the Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement, CETA, between Canada and the European Union is generally regarded as one of the most progressive, fair, and ambitious free trade agreements, at least of the last few years. CETA has provisionally entered into force on September 21st of 2017. Since then, 1 year has passed. Can you tell us how the ratification process is making progress?
Well, I'm very pleased to say that CETA, of course, 99% of it on a trade-weighted value perspective has come into force. These are the elements that are under, on your side, commission authority and which here in Canada are clearly under federal jurisdiction. The agreement also requires ratification in member states, and I actually hope to use this call to speak about the issues that your members are hearing, both from a German perspective and a European perspective on the agreement, and to answer any questions and actually get your advice about how Canada can most effectively communicate what we see as the clear benefits of this agreement. I would note that exports from both the EU and more specifically from Germany are up to Canada, about 7.8%. This is only merchandise export of goods. We're also awaiting annual services data. As your members probably know, national statistics do not provide month-to-month data on services trade, but do provide good or merchandise trade. And here in Canada also, trade is up overall to the European Union, including up 7% to Germany. The idea, though, that we should only look at what we're exporting to one another, as if that's the measure of the agreement. You may recall there's someone else globally who is very focused only on what's the amount being exported and the trade balance. And of course, that doesn't provide a full picture. We have to look at our two-way foreign direct investment, our innovation collaboration, our collaboration on the environment, including the implementation of the Paris Agreement, student exchanges, and a very rich history between Canada and Europe, not only, of course, of sending us talent, because a good portion of Canadians are, of course, of European descent, but also continuing to do fantastic innovation together, including on clean cities and mobility. I was just in Germany earlier this year after Davos at the Siemens headquarters for a meeting with Canadian and German innovation leaders, and we reviewed a whole host of sectors, including life sciences and health, public health, and integration of refugees, which is a very key topic, I know, for Germany, and something we're very preoccupied because Canada is, by all measures, literally the most multicultural country on the planet. We're very good at integrating people from multiple backgrounds. So I would just encourage us on this conversation today to take, first of all, a very long view of our relationship, CETA being just one element of that long and enduring relation and collaboration, and also take a more holistic view of our economic and social linkages.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. So that really gives us the full picture of our relationship, and I'm glad that you already mentioned some of the key economic successes in trade and investments, just to give us some facts and figures where we are right now. That's a really good start, I guess, and I'm now interested in the following question, which also comes from our membership. The Canadian government wants to accomplish the goal that CETA delivers on its many promises, as you just mentioned. Can you explain to us how important it is to constantly promote CETA, since this benefits and helps business to really navigate the agreement?
Well, I think it's important that we don't just sign agreements, that we actually tell business about them. And, of course, one of our interests here in Canada is what Prime Minister Trudeau and Minister Carr, the Minister of International Trade, and Minister Freeland, our Minister of Foreign Affairs, call progressive and inclusive trade. And what that means is we're interested not only in helping large companies export and making sure that tariffs and regulatory systems are more aligned between Canada and the EU, and I would include in that food safety, but also that more companies are exporting and more small businesses are exporting. For us, this can take many forms. This can take part of a large company supply chain. So we do a lot of introductions of small business to large suppliers, both Canadian and German.
Mm-hmm.
So that company may not, in fact, be, shall we say, the exporter of record, so the final entity exporting the good or service, but they are in what is a supply chain driven by exporting and should see themselves not only as domestic producers, but as exporters. A second piece is, of course, encouraging more small businesses to become exporters. We have a very rich number, and so does Germany. We actually have done research. You have a very excellent intensity. So where your SMEs do export, German SMEs are incredibly innovative, and the value of what they export is, in fact, higher than what the average Canadian SME who's exporting exports. So we have a lot to learn from Germany, particularly in innovative advanced manufacturing and areas where technology is being layered into as a platform into all goods and services, agricultural technology being just one example that's very interesting for Canada. And then, and I should say, we're very focused on the host of tools that are available for small businesses. We have, of course, a few hundred years less of capital formation than Germany does. And in that sense, what I would say is that in Germany, the business finance for SMEs is very, very robust in the commercial sector. In other words, banks that are very oriented towards financing small business exporters, as well as your business associations, including regional and even city-level business associations that frankly have hundreds of years of both history and capital formation. In Canada, we just celebrated our 150th anniversary as a country. We do have six excellent banks. I would, of course, be remiss if I didn't take this moment on the call to remind all of our listeners that Canada did not experience the global financial crisis the same way the U.S. did. We have our own financial services regulators. None of our banks were nationalized. No Canadians lost their homes. We didn't do subprime mortgages. So we have our own perspective on that. But in addition to our commercial sector, which is very robust and healthy, we do have what are federal entities to lend capital to small business. And again, I'd say this is an area of great collaboration for Canada and Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third piece is including more people who haven't exported, new immigrants who have connections back to interesting supply chains in their countries of origin, women, minorities, our First Nations communities, what you might call Indians, but we refer to as Indigenous or First Nations, Métis and Inuit Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
to ensure that they have financing. And many of them are both exporting unique products, but also using e-commerce platforms to become exporters for the first time. And that's something we're very focused on and very excited by.
Well, that's a terrific overview, really, to get more into that trade diversification of CETA and really get an impression what's all at stake. And the agreement is particularly progressive in terms of labor rights and environmental protection. And quite frankly, it is a masterpiece of negotiation led by Chrystia Freeland, now Canada's Minister of Foreign Affairs and the former Minister of International Trade. Do you think CETA has a positive impact on other negotiations of free trade agreements?
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. I mean, we of course hope so, and certainly we have used aspects of the CETA negotiations in our work on the Comprehensive and Progressive Trans-Pacific Partnership, specifically looking at issues related to the environment, as well as labor side agreements. The other element I would say is, as you're seeing NAFTA be renegotiated, we've long had labor and environmental chapters there. We'd like to see those become more robust. We've also proposed a chapter on gender and a chapter on Indigenous First Nations trade in NAFTA as well. Mm-hmm. We'll only see as those negotiations conclude what's in the final agreement. But I think you've hit on a really important point, and it's very simply this, that our values are very well aligned between Canada and Germany, in particular the high protection of labor. I would note for the interest of your audience that in the Mexico-U.S. negotiations on NAFTA, our general position there was please negotiate whatever you want into the highest standard, because Canada continues to have the highest all-in wage compensation for workers. We continue to have the most robust public health care system. We are like Europe and various models, particularly France and the UK, than the US on health care.
Mm-hmm.
All Canadians have access to a very high level of health care. And we would like to see that adopted, protections in particular, for the ability of national governments. So in the case of the European Union member states and in the case of Canada in both CETA and NAFTA Canada and our provinces, which are like your Lander, to be able to continue to regulate for our healthcare system, for cultural rights, and things that are very important to Canadians that are, in fact, not in the agreement and which we continue to believe are very well established under national control if we're not able to come to multilateral agreements on some of these really important social and supporting issues. An issue that's never been covered by the European Union, it's in fact the area that I did my PhD thesis on, is increased welfare state integration, labor market integration in the EU.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to having a fiscal, monetary, and economic union, it's of course very interesting to see where the European Union has managed to get to on labor internally inside the EU, of course on some good labor standards and protections, including night work, hours of work, part-time work, maternity and parental leave. These continue to be issues that Canada is very interested in.
Okay, very good. Since you just talked about NAFTA, let's put another question of a member of Atlantic Booker now into place, the original North American Free Trade Agreement. NAFTA, which was ratified in 1994, is being renegotiated between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, as you just said. Can you tell us, with all of your insight and expertise, in which phase the negotiation is right now?
Oh, well, you know, right now, today.
Yeah.
Right now, today, my minister is probably somewhere flying into Washington.
Yeah, I read that at
Minister
White House.
Is flying into Washington, and the negotiations continue. We've modernized NAFTA 12 times before. It's not like this has never been done before. New issues come to the forefront, and I think some of those are in CETA. Everything from e-commerce to improved services standards to trade in data and digital, as well as improved environmental protection. So all these things are certainly on the agenda for us, And we have an offer. We have an offer table to the U.S. That's under ongoing negotiations right now.
Mm-hmm.
Prime Minister Trudeau has been quite clear publicly about where some of the tougher areas are. Those include access to our dairy industry. We could get into that if your members are interested, but we have a very different system in Canada, in fact, than the rest of the world. And second issue would be culture. Mm-hmm. Potential issues around a cultural exemption, which we maintain for particularly to guard French language rights in Quebec and the ability to produce our own national content and protect our cultural industries. And a third would be Chapter 19, which concerns the settlement of disputes. So
right.
Minister Freeland has been very active with her counterpart, Bob Lighthizer. She'll be back in Washington this week, and we have in fact, the CETA negotiator, Steve Verhuell, is our chief negotiator for NAFTA, and Steve is excellent. So we're very well prepared, and certainly we want to see a deal that works for all three parties, Canada, Mexico, and the United States.
And do you think the deadline that is now being communicated in the public, October 1st, is somewhat realistic?
Well, we're working hard. Mm-hmm. working hard. I certainly hope that our American friends will see the value in what we've tabled as our proposal.
Okay, well, very good. Let's jump back to CPTPP because that's
sure.
also very interesting. After the U.S. government decided to pull out of the completed Trans-Pacific Partnership, TPP, between the United States and 11 further nations in the Pacific Rim, the agreement was ratified as the now so-called Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership, CPTPP, by the remaining group of states, including Canada. How does CETA, combined with CPTPP, place Canada in a strategic position for Canadian companies and foreign direct investment?
Yeah, so I think it's very clear Canada is not the United States of America right now. It never has been. It never will be. One of the key vectors for us right now that makes us very different from the United States is our openness to the rest of the world. Our position is that we want to be the gateway on our East Coast and across the country, of course, to CETA, to NAFTA, and an effective agreement with the Americas. We're also negotiating with the Pacific Alliance in South America as well as Mercosur.
Mm-hmm.
And we concluded the CPTPP, more popularly known as TPP negotiations, because we find it very important to set high standards and rules, including on elements like the engagement of state-owned enterprises in the market economy with Asian partners. And having a deal with Japan, we felt, has tremendous value. It's an incredibly, as you know, wealthy, important G7 country, but also one that shares our values in protecting the environment and consumers. So locking in that deal, we think it's very important. We think it's important to set standards that influence supply chains. This is the kind of deal which we hope will be open over time after ratification of the initial group of members to other countries. We will also continue to watch what goes on with the UK and Brexit, depending on their decisions. I mean, they continue to – we just had Liam Fox, the UK minister, here.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, of course, like other nations, said that if and when those exit negotiations conclude, we would also conclude a free trade agreement with the UK. In general, that gives us access, as a country of 37 million people, to over 1.2 billion consumers in the world's richest markets, the EU, the US, Mexico, Japan, Vietnam, Malaysia, and the other TPP members. That's very important for our exporters. Another vector we continue to see is very important is our immigration system. So we, again, remain open to immigrants. We accept one of the highest percentages of immigrants. And might I just tip my hat, I know that Germany has accepted an incredible number of refugees. And the integration of those refugees and new immigrants is one of the most pressing challenges that we have, not a doubt. And equality isn't just a theory. And integration isn't just a theory, it's also something that we have to live every day. And these are our challenges as some of the most advanced economies on the planet.
Well, this is definitely correct. I totally agree. Since you just touched upon the Brexit issue, I would come back to this because it's also a question posed by a member of Atlantikbrücke. Would you recommend CETA specifically as a role model for the United Kingdom and its future relationship to the EU?
Well, I mean, have your members seen this? I don't know how widely it was circulated, but I think it got a lot of airplay. Was this kind of graph or illustration from the European Commission trying to tell the United Kingdom how much it would lose, if you will, in terms of influence by leaving the European Union?
Yeah.
So it showed EU membership, then it showed, if I recall, EFTA, and then it showed other relationships, including CETA. And let's just say if it was a series of steps, the Canada-EU deal was portrayed as, you know, many steps down, which, of course, it's not membership. It's not membership of the EU. We don't have a fiscal arrangement. We don't have CAP, the Common Agricultural Policy.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have Schengen. All these elements, of course, layer into, as well as the monetary union, which the UK, of course, never joined. So we think it is absolutely a model for the UK, but that will be, of course, up to the UK government to decide what it is pursuing. I was joking with my UK counterparts who were here that if they copy the agreement, we should probably charge them a licensing fee.
Okay. Dr. Campbell, let's get back more to the bigger picture. Free trade agreements are complicated treaties full of technical details, and however, this symbolizes openness and cooperation in a globalized world. Does free trade have the potential to really offer opposition to the current trend of protectionism and isolationism around the world?
I definitely subscribe to the trade theory of peace, which is that it is harder for countries that are more open and integrated to go to war with one another. That they see more in common with one another. That has to be joined, though, with ongoing dialogue on a host of other issues. We are not just our economies, we are societies. And it requires conversations about human rights, which Canada is very strong on. I would welcome the European Union joining us in our condemnation of Saudi Arabia's arrest of women and male and female human rights activists.
Mm-hmm.
Canada continues to play a very strong role, of course, as well in articulating our concerns with Russia, its involvement in the Ukraine and cyber attacks. We continue to engage on those vectors, including human rights and labor and the environment with China. There's so much we have in common with the European Union, so much we have in common with Germany. Having lived in the European Union, I'm also an EU citizen.
Mm-hmm.
I have an Irish passport.
That's very
Ireland,
good to know.
Ireland will be the last English native English-speaking country, ironically,
mm-hmm.
Left after Brexit. But what I can say is that having spent time in Europe, I know, for example, as well, the importance of the European Union to Germany from a social perspective, and also the concerns of Germany from a financial, fiscal perspective. And Canada at the G7 and the G20 has worked very collaboratively with Germany on fiscal consolidation. That is very clear reporting of overall deficit and debt levels between municipal, state, federal, and in your case also European Commission, supranational financial reporting. We continue to be a very fiscally responsible partner. Like Germany, we've seen the benefits of joining with others in a trade agreement, but Germany has gone a step further. I think the European Union has delivered an amazing benefit to Germany in the form of the euro, which keeps your exports priced very competitively and much lower than they would be if you were pricing them independently in Deutschmark.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a floating exchange rate. This is one of the other elements, of course, with NAFTA, that our exchange rate continues to also provide a buffer for exogenous shocks. So there's such a rich set of dialogues, fiscal, human rights, environment, social, going on, and I think it's important that we don't put all of this on trade. I personally don't think, and I'll just end it there, that trade agreements can deliver everything or peace and integration. And I think if globalization is only about trade, it will fail. If globalization is also about how we take care of each other and how we take care of the environment and includes elements, of course, like aid and helping other countries develop their judiciary, which Canada's one of our most active aid programs is in fact helping countries with their rule of law,
mm-hmm.
establishing an independent judiciary, training judges, training police, training military police. This is the form our peacekeeping is taking in Mali, for example, with the UN. I mean, if we leave this just to trade, no, I don't think it's going to work. But I think it's an important place to not necessarily only start, but it's an important piece to have in our toolkit.
All right. Well, then we will already come to our last question of today's Transatlantic Call. There are completely different styles of interaction with the current U.S. administration on the international level. We've seen the German Chancellor Merkel dealing with President Trump in a typically sober manner, and the French President Macron being very charming at first. In comparison, at least that is sometimes our impression, your Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau used more direct and maybe strict words after the unpleasant sequel of this year's G7 summit in Quebec. To what extent has this approach altered Canada's way of negotiating with the Trump administration?
Well, I think Canada has a very simple philosophy, which is that the United States, first of all, continues to be very important to Canada and always will be. It's our largest neighbor. Millions of Canadians share, if not passports, then family and business connections. The United States is many things. The United States is, of course, the office of the president. It's also Congress. It's also governors of states. State governors are incredibly powerful in the U.S. system. And we have, for example, in the Paris Climate Change Agreement, in ratifying it and supporting the members of that agreement, we've reached out and been very active at the U.S. state and city level. For example, in New York, with both Governor Cuomo and the mayor. In California with both the governor and mayors of San Francisco. So Canada will continue to pursue, I would say, a very multi-level strategy when it comes to engaging the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I think our British traditions, in one sense, will keep us very focused. There's an old British saying, keep calm and carry on. I mean, we know who we are. We know what our values are. We are a multilingual, multiracial society that's very open to the world. That is challenging. It requires constant dialogue with our citizens. It doesn't mean we are immune to any of the racist concerns that exist in the world. The Prime Minister's commitment to inclusion of women, of LGBTQ, citizens, our engagement on that issue globally, our commitment to the environment. This is something very clearly that, it in fact has been very well presented and will continue to be so done by Prime Minister Trudeau, who I have the pleasure of serving. But I can assure you that that won't change no matter who's elected in Canada. These are very fundamental values for Canadians.
Well, these are.
I know we're coming to the end of our call.
Right.
I want to make sure that if there is anyone else on your call.
Unfortunately, we have already reached the end of our call.
If there's any questions, people are free to contact me. I hope that you've given my contact details. I'm on Twitter, Ailish Campbell. You can reach me by email through the Atlantic Brücke, and thanks to all your members for their time.
Well, these are great closing remarks, and thank you very much. And with this, I get back to David Deisner.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Robin. And thank you so much, Ailish Campbell. Sorry,
yeah,
for your
thanks.
Very illuminating remarks and really telling us more about, you know, the current state of affairs and negotiations around CETA and NAFTA.
Yes.
Certainly very helpful for us. And, we first met at our German-Canadian conference back in Munich, and very much looking forward to, yeah, having you again at Atlantic Brücke and joining the debate here in Berlin or elsewhere. It was great to have you. Thank you so
yes,
much.
Yes, thank you. The one last piece that I would just add is I would like your advice. I'm very serious. So the members of this call are leaders in many fields, in many sectors. So please do email me, ailish.campbell, ailish.campbell@international.gc.ca, with your advice for us about how we can engage as Germany prepares to examine CETA over the coming years for national ratification. So thanks so much for that.
Well, thank you. Thank
Take
you
care.
So much, and we'll make sure to put everyone in contact. Thank you for that.
I look forward to it. Thanks.
Okay.
Take
thank
care.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Good evening. Bye-bye.